Introduce yourself, please.
I am Stephanie Clayton, representative for the Kansas House 19th District, which is composed of areas including South Prairie Village, East Central Overland Park, and almost all of Old Leawood.
Outstanding. Here's the open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. Joining Stephanie and myself today in the KCUR production studio is Ryan Smith. He's from Mission, Kansas, and my KCUR colleague, Brian Ellison, who you have enjoyed anchoring election night coverage here on the station. First, a little bit of full disclosure here. Stephanie is my state representative, and I voted for her in the last election. I feel I needed to say that. Very disclosive of you. We had a lot of things to get to, but Stephanie, we start with my two favorite questions. Tell me about your kids and your pets and how you got into politics.
All right. Well, I have two children, a son who is about 4 and a half. He'll start kindergarten this fall, so very excited about that. And a daughter who is 10 and in fifth grade. She's quite the little overachiever. I'm very, very proud of her. So,
how'd you find your way into politics?
I found my way into politics. I mean, I've always been involved. I was that kid who got my advance ballots sent to me in college. So I was paying attention to local politics from the moment that I could vote. In fact, I pre-registered to vote early before I even turned 18. So that was how excited I was to get into it. I was chair of the Johnson County Young Republicans for a number of years, so spent a lot of time being active there. I've managed a fair amount of local city campaigns. And then when the time to run came, I ran.
Pets?
No, my daughter has allergies, although my children like to take in insects. We had a praying mantis that they actually named after another state representative that I work with, but not out of unkindness. This colleague of mine is dearly loved by my children, and so Melissa the mantis was with us for quite some time. So that was the pets we have.
I think I know who you're talking about, and by the way, that heretofore that is now my favorite story here on State House Blend. There's a lot of things that I want to get to. You guys are going to be back in session on the 29th. I want to talk about the budget a little bit. Before we do that, I want to go around the table and see what's on everybody's mind. Ryan?
I think the biggest thing on my mind is, you know, everyone else has talked about this too, but education in the budget hole. Those are the two biggest things that came to my mind.
What is it that you're concerned about? What's your question? What does Stephanie need to know when she goes back to Topeka?
Well, obviously the budget hole, I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time on that as far as what plagues me when I go to sleep at night about it. You know, that shortfall is pretty significant. But I had a really interesting conversation with my fiance today about education and kind of the perception of education at the state level, because as we know, the state controls a lot of the funding for education. And I think from a layman's perspective and as a voter, we don't tend to voice our opinion when it matters. And that's during the state elections. So addressing that, where does the impetus, voter involvement on education, I think is a big deal for me.
Stephanie, I think what we're asking here is, here's what I take away is that there seems to be voter involvement. Voters voted in the governor and their legislature, and now we weren't lied to, we're getting exactly what they promised. So that's voter involvement, right?
To a certain degree. If you look at turnout rates, for instance, in our neighborhood, in our neck of the woods, you have in the primary election, it was a 39% turnout rate, which is astronomically high for a primary. I cannot explain to you how high that is. And that's because you have higher turnout rates in areas where the citizenry is more established. The Homes Association that I live in, Knoll Hills, has many of the people who live there are people who bought their houses when that development was originally put forth. So you have years and years of investment of everyone knowing everyone. So you're going to have higher turnout inside the 435 loop, most specifically specifically in Northeast Johnson County, where your older settlements are. As you get further outside of the Loop, these are new communities. And it's not that the citizenry is apathetic or disengaged. They're just differently engaged. They're paying more attention to national issues, and they're voting based on how they feel about Washington all the way down the ticket, whereas inside the 435 Loop, they're voting more more locally because they know who we are.
Mm-hmm. That's it's interesting. I want to get back to that, but I want to bring Brian in here right now and see what's on your mind.
Well, it occurs to me that one of the reasons primary turnout might be higher in certain districts, at least, is that the primary election is the only one that matters, in that it's going to be a conservative Republican or a moderate Republican who gets elected. And if it turns out that it's a moderate Republican, as I believe is a title you would accept for yourself, that's who gets elected.
I'm a Republican.
So. Oh, okay.
that's what I am.
Well, wait a minute. We do have to. You need to define your terms here.
Mm-hmm.
How is that different from a moderate Republican or a conservative Republican, or how is it different from a Reagan Republican or a Rockefeller Republican? And do I need to go on?
Well,
a Goldwater Republican.
There's so many labels.
And it's interesting because here in Kansas, where we have a very red Kansas, mm-hmm. I was visiting with a friend the other day who's a Democrat and lives in Kansas, so they do exist. But it's interesting because I think the way that I even think about things, I think of Republicans as this massive spectrum, because people want to say, oh, we have three parties in Kansas. And I look in the state house and we're not factions. We're a spectrum. You could line us up. And in fact, I'm more conservative than some Republicans that I serve with. I'm certainly less conservative. But then again, what even is conservative? By my definition, I didn't support the tax plan, for instance, because I found it to be radical and reckless. Yet the people who did support the tax plan would be defined by those terms as conservatives. So you really start getting into all of these semantics as to what means what. So that's why you look at things like Rockefeller Republican or Goldwater Republican or Reagan Republican. You have to keep in mind that Reagan, God bless his soul, would not be able to be elected in a primary today. So
absolutely.
It's an interesting spectrum. So because I spent a number of my politically active years as a young Republican leader, my biggest thing that I worked on then was party unity and Big Tent. And in fact, my congressman addressed a group of the Northeast Johnson County Republican women as, and he talked to us about how important it was to expand the message to moderates, even liberals, and, you know, just open up the Republican Party and make it a Big Ten again. So
right.
If our congressman's saying that, me too.
Right, you're Kevin Yoder saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's actually my question to you, Stephanie, is you know, the moderate, if by that definition you're a moderate, someone who is not where the conservative supporters of the tax bill, for example, are,
mm-hmm.
And who we've heard some of your colleagues in the House say felt kind of excluded from that process and not having the voices fully heard, is there a future for people who are like you? I know that, okay, so maybe it's not a faction, maybe it's just the people standing near you in that spectrum, you said,
mm-hmm.
but is there a future in the party in Kansas for people standing where you're standing?
You know, I honestly do think that there is, because we speak often of the pendulum and how it swings and how certain people aren't even deemed pure enough. And I have many friends who are much more conservative than I am, who all of a sudden are finding themselves as not pure enough. So this sort of thing, the party in some ways starts eating its own. And then I've had conservative friends come to me and say, oh, yeah, now I know how you feel. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. We'll just hang out and be Republicans together.
But you
and
think
just
the
do
pendulum will swing back?
I believe so. And there are different ways that you can make your voice known. For instance, when I'm in Topeka, it is a somewhat stressful environment. But when I'm home, I feel great because I'm talking to my constituents, even though I tend to vote differently from the majority party of my party. I'm very clearly voting my district, because when I come home, I might feel a little odd for, say, voting against the constitutional carry gun bill. But then when I come home, I realize that I would have gotten run out of town if I had voted yes on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes down to voting your district and being you know, I'm a Republican the same way that my neighbors are Republicans. I know what I knocked on thousands of doors last summer to find out how they felt, to introduce myself to them during the election. And trust me, they feel the same way that I do. And someone might call me, drop that pejorative, rhino. I hate that word, but but it is used. And they, sure, I'm a public figure. I can take it. But they, what people also don't realize is that they're calling thousands of Republicans that I represent that same name. And these are just citizens, many of whom are job creators and productive members of society, who don't deserve to be insulted.
Ryan, you are taking a lot of notes, and I'm afraid you're going to have to share those with us. What do you? What is it that you're writing over there?
Well, I was writing a little bit more on the inside the loop, inside the 435 loop. That's where my family lives. Again, my family is transplants to the area, as we were talking about before we came in the studio. And you know, it was really interesting, the transition that we made moving out here about 10 years ago. The way that I think my family is aligned politically in Kansas is, you know, a lot of the things that have come across, you know, in the 10 years that we've been here. My mother voted for Sebelius in the first election here, voted for Brownback the first time, and then I'm not sure who she voted for this time. Didn't have a chance to talk with her beforehand. But, you know, where we are from, you know, we are the conservative base, you know, if you consider we're from, you know, New York, Pennsylvania. Out here, I mean, you're as moderate to kicked out of your party as you can get. And there's a real feeling, at least in the neighborhood that my parents are from, that the party doesn't represent me, either one of them. And so there's feels like there's this big chasm in the middle of people who are just not represented at all by what's going on in Topeka.
I would say that that's something that I heard people express to me when I was chairing Johnson County Young Republicans. It's something that I hear now. And you think about what moderate and conservative mean, and in many ways, it is geography. I'm a member of a group called Women in Government, which is a national group of women legislators. And it is absolutely hilarious. I have a dear friend who is a senator from Massachusetts, and she is a Democrat. And when I sit down and talk to her, I said to her at one point, I said, honey, you are much more conservative than I am. And she's like, no, I'm not. I'm a Democrat. And I think about if I was in Massachusetts,
that label.
I would be considered very, very, very conservative. So it's really geography.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we were speaking before we came in here, yep. Ryan is from Westchester, Pennsylvania, which is suburban Philadelphia, Delaware County.
Chester County.
Mm-hmm. Which is a whole different flavor of Republican than it is here. It is until you get out into upstate Pennsylvania, you know, it's hard to find that sort of conservative Republican that we see here from outside the 435 loop, South Johnson County, rural parts of Kansas.
Well, and it's even interesting in as much as, you know, on the national level, in the great ousting during Bush's second term was when Santorum was ousted. Chester County was the only county that went for Santorum in the state, I think. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting about that is that the way he's been portrayed on the national scene is as this hard conservative, which on social issues he is, but on economic issues, he's about as moderate can get on a lot of things. At least he was when he was senator from Pennsylvania. Yeah. There's a reason that he could win blue-collar working-class people.
I want to move on here.
Yeah.
I get Stephanie's email newsletter weekly, every other week?
It kind of depends. It slows down a little bit during legislative break. You'll get one after the revenue numbers come out tomorrow,
right.
when I have time to analyze those.
Right.
I'm kind of... waiting with bated breath.
as everybody is, just let everybody who's listening right now know we're doing this on Sunday the 19th, and the consensus revenue estimators get together tomorrow, which is the 20th. So if you're listening past that gets us on the correct calendar. But I just got your newsletter the other day, and you voted quite a bit of space to Jon Stewart and The Daily Show. I want to play a clip of that right now, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Kansas is our standard bearer of normalcy to some extent, your good old-fashioned average American state. Right now it's run by Governor Sam Brownback, who has walked the walk of his conservative principles and transformed the state into a veritable right-topia. Low taxes and deregulation for
Kansas Governor Sam Brownback has signed a new concealed weapons law for Kansas.
The measure eliminates the 8 hours of training previously required by state law and the need to carry a permit.
That's 8 hours you could have already been shooting stuff. Pew, pew, pew. But before the new gun rules make you go and cancel your trip to Kansas's famed Barbed Wire Museum, which is a real museum in Kansas, there's no need for Kansas shooters to go to safety school.
Brownback says he signed the bill into law because Kansas gun owners have shown that they're responsible.
No, that's a reason you allow your children to get a hamster. Well, you've shown you're responsible. You can take care of a hamster. And by the way, even then, you're going to want to keep a couple of shoeboxes around. You know what I'm saying?
So why does this make a difference? Why? What difference does it make if some guy from New York City sits there and makes fun of Kansas? What difference does it make to us?
You know, it's interesting because I've been asked that question a lot. There actually have been proven effects that this really does, reputation does matter. Do you, and you were not in the state at the time, Ryan, but you probably remember, and you may have remembered hearing about this nationally, when the State Board of Education decided to... you're all nodding your heads, decided to de-emphasize evolution.
Right.
Part of the problem is that when you look at the local economy in Johnson County, you have primarily services, especially engineers and IT. Now, if you are a business who is recruiting people from the engineering field and from the IT field, individuals with that type of education, if you're recruiting nationally, tend to track a little bit more liberal. And you've got these three sort of, or four really, if you count Omaha, these sort of new tech hubs that you have. And Kansas City is really starting to become a technical and entrepreneurial hub. And I want this to happen because I need my constituents to all have really high paying, awesome jobs. I don't feel like I'm doing my job unless I'm making sure that this happens. Now, it's very difficult to have a company want to settle here, knowing that, or even grow their business here, knowing that it's very difficult to recruit people nationally, because why would they come to Kansas when it's that weird place that, you know, does all these weird, crazy gun bills and, you know, hates evolution and seems backward to them, when they could go live in Austin or Seattle that have those types of reputations? Even people who want a little bit more of a Midwest flavor and want things a little bit more slowed down can just go to Omaha instead of Kansas City. So now Kansas City, you know, you've got this bi-state issue, but guess what? Kansas City, Missouri gets hurt when Kansas does weird things. So I don't want Missouri doing anything like that either. So just let me go on the record there. But I don't control that side of the state line. I can only affect what goes on in Kansas.
Yeah.
Well,
Ryan,
I guess.
And while you're speaking, Stephanie,
need more
just,
coffee.
Yeah, pour me a little more coffee. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, not at all. I guess my question, Stephanie, just to push back a little bit on that is, even while Kansas has done all these, as you said, weird things, there have been decisions by companies to move their operations to Kansas, right? I mean, there have been. Isn't it more an issue of money talking more than the weird things that Kansas does?
I believe that it's not just an issue of low taxes or tax numbers or anything as far as incentives goes. It is a very complicated combination. Part of the problem is that in government, especially because we're not there forever, I have 2-year terms, and so we're not there for a long time. We want to come in and have a very simple, quick fix. I've had some leadership training with a great group called Kansas Leadership Center, and they speak of adaptive problems versus technical problems. A technical solution to a technical problem is, oh, we just make a tweak in the law and all of a sudden everything's fine. Job creation is about the most adaptive of adaptive problems you could possibly think of, because think of all of the layers that go in to making a community appealing to business. You have to have a good tax structure. You have to have competitive incentives. You have to have excellent schools, great quality of life, good law enforcement. I could go on, but I don't want to take up the entire show. But all of these things are intricately put together. And it's almost like a tapestry. You pull out one thread and the whole entire thing just completely falls apart. So it's a very delicate balance, and it is not as simple as people would have you believe. You can't just cut an income tax to zero and all of a sudden the jobs magically materialize, because, well, I haven't seen it happen yet. It's complicated.
Well, there's a lot more about coming to an area, whether it's for business or personal issues. You know, there's a lot more to that process than the tax structure. You know, do you want to bring a family into that culture? And that's a huge piece of the puzzle as well.
Can I just, is that the weirdness factor? And I was just, as you say, do you want to bring a family into this? And so if you include in the weirdness factor, gun law, you know,
or safety for
loosening gun laws,
yeah.
And
the gun laws,
moving away from I think government's responsibility to help those who are in dire needs, is that part of the weirdness factor? Do you think, Ryan?
I would. I mean, the
I'm very intrigued by the weirdness factor.
The particular piece on just as long as you mentioned it, the recent bill on the gun legislation was, I mean, that floored me. I mean, it didn't surprise me, but it nonetheless floored me. I mean, and that's, I mean...
Well, and Stephanie, you were very out there on the gun issue, particularly. You're the mother of two children. I mm-hmm. guess, you know, it's beyond weirdness, really, Sam. It feels like it's a safety issue. Other parents I've talked to are genuinely, I'd afraid maybe too strong, but I mean, genuinely, like, nervous about more guns around.
There's definitely a concern over it.
I have heard, and this was even last year during the primary campaign, when we had, there used to be two of my cities, Prairie Village and Leawood, both had local open carry bans. And see, the thing is that I have no problem if they want to do constitutional carry over, you know, like in Hayes, which is part of the area where one of the sponsors of the bill lives. I'm fine. Guns are different in the country than they are in the suburbs. The culture is different. The lifestyle is different. And I don't want to begrudge them their opportunity to live their lifestyle. But you know what? I become rather displeased when I see them begrudging my constituents to live the lifestyle that they want to live. And I mentioned this at one of my forums that I hosted last month, talking about how concerned I was, because most of the time when you're a representative, you think about the old Maslow's hierarchy of human needs that you study in psychology, Psych 101, right? And at the very bottom of the pyramid are, okay, how do I not die? And at the top is self-actualization. And my constituents were expressing needs that were at the bottom of the pyramid.
I'd like to not die.
I represent Johnson County.
Living,
I represent
dying.
One of the most prosperous areas in the entire state. And when my constituents are feeling their lives being threatened, when they're at the bottom of the pyramid, I've got a problem with that.
But there's a tough line about when you decide what needs to be controlled locally, mm-hmm. and when you don't want 105 counties, mm-hmm. if you will, with 105 different ways of regulating whatever. So how is it that where is that line between what has to be regulated at the state level and what we can give to local government?
Well, it's interesting because when it comes to our alcohol laws, for instance, we have no problem giving control locally to counties, to municipalities. We may see that with a proposed change to our liquor laws coming up soon. So if that bill ends up coming before us for a vote. So
and there are still dry counties in Kansas, are there not?
If there are, I've not visited them. but certainly one thing that shocked me was that as a legislator, I had read about Carrie Nation. I'm a history major. So I knew that line of thought had existed, but it wasn't until I became a legislator that I actually heard the phrase demon rum used unironically. So we do have colleagues who would like to see alcohol banned entirely in every way, shape, or form. And then I have colleagues, such as myself, I represent an area that goes up to the Missouri border. So we're competing with Missouri, which has, I believe, some of the most liberal liquor laws in the entire nation. Mm-hmm. And we're bleeding revenue as my constituents hop over state line to go to Trader Joe's.
Well, that was mentioned in the program last week, I believe. Where they were saying with the sin taxes, you're gonna have people hopping over the state line, which, I mean, you do. I mean, if you live 15 minutes away, you hop over the state lines. I mean, lower tax.
You will to a certain degree, but for instance, with cigarette taxes, the most poor people can't afford to buy a carton of cigarettes all at once. And so they will buy it by the pack. They will purchase in their neighborhood. And those are the Kansans who will be paying that tax. Now, a lot of my constituents actually have written to me to support an increase in cigarette taxes because this is from the public health standpoint. And so I would certainly hope that increasing taxes on cigarettes would be a deterrent to smoking. So you want fewer people doing that because it's bad for them. But I don't know. It's interesting. Do we have a deterrent become a revenue generator, and is that valid?
And it's still affecting the poorest Kansans the most.
Yes. And so, I mean, it's interesting because I represent it's kind of a stratified area, to tell you the truth. I represent some people who have Section 8 housing. I represent people who have houses that cost millions and millions of dollars. So I've got it all. So it's interesting to look at how you have to look at how things affect all of those people, because otherwise you're not representing the district fully.
Mm-hmm. We need to wrap it up. Once again, I come away smarter than I did when I walked in here. Before we say goodbye, though, I want to go around the horn one more time. One last question or one last thought, Brian Ellison.
Just a question to follow up. You said it's stressful when you're in Topeka. It's great when you're home. Could it be a fun place again? I mean, what has to change? Or how can you make it a less stressful place?
You know what's interesting is that I have encountered a lot of conservative leaders that I know that really respect all Republicans of all stripes and understand that you've got to vote your district. In fact, you see that honestly with the Senate president. She has been kind to a lot of senators who are like, hey, listen, if I vote for this thing, then things will go bad. You have to give me cover on this. So understanding that, it's so easy to be a leader of a Republican super, super, super majority and exclude half and marginalize a lot of people. But it can be kind of lazy. Really, the challenging thing to do is to open up that spectrum and, work a little bit harder with that supermajority. So I'm really looking forward to serving a third term, hopefully, under House leadership that has that more all-inclusive mentality.
Ryan, final thought or question?
My final thought is it really seems like, again, going back to the budget hole, it really seems like what's happening, at least from my perspective, where I try and be up on the news, and it really seems like the budget hole and where the revenue is going to come from is really being just swept under the rug again to meet the revenue goals that we have to meet to not have this massive shortfall.
I have many colleagues that say we do not have a budget hole.
Good grief.
That absolutely, I am not making that up. They say there is no deficit. I've looked, it's about 500, as low as 450 million. I've heard as high as 600 million.
That's just chump change.
I expect this to change somewhat tomorrow.
Right.
Again, I'm somehow hoping for a miracle.
Yeah.
We're not going to get a miracle, but I hope for one.
No.
Ryan Smith from Mission Kansas, thank you. My KCUR colleague, Brian Ellison, thank you for being here.
Thanks,
State
Sam.
House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the program on iTunes. You can find us on kcur.org. We've spiffed that up, by the way. It's looking good.
It looks fantastic.
There. Our friends over there on Up to Date make a little room for us on Tuesdays at 11 o'clock. Do you like Twitter? You guys on the Twitter? If you're
Twitter.
Not, you should follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. Stephanie, it's my favorite part of the show to get to know you just a little bit better. We close with your favorite song. What is it?
All right. Well, the song that I chose today is actually an instrumental from the best movie of all time, which is The Empire Strikes Back. I'm looking at your faces, and I know what you're probably thinking, because, of course, I asked friends and family, oh, gosh, what song would you suggest? Because I wanted to convey something. I wanted to convey exactly where we are just as far as Kansas politics in general. And so, of course, I had a lot of friends jokingly suggest the Imperial March. And guys, we're not... It's not like that. It's not that bad. In fact, I chose the final track from the movie, and what I want you all to think about is this is right after Luke gets his hand cut off. He's getting the new one installed, and at the very end, as the music kind of swells to that crescendo, he's standing there with Leia and R2, and he's looking out the window. They see the Falcon fly away as Lando is going to sort of set up the initial operations, and so I just want you all to think about this. We're in Act Two. There's still a great deal of hope that we've got. And right now, I guess we have to close up the show because we have to go rescue Han Solo, and we have a lot of stuff that we need to do. So.
We do. I knew the Force was strong with this group when we rolled tape this morning. I'm Sam Zeff. We'll see you next time.